Welcome to the Butts and Seats podcast, episode number 141.
We back.
I'm Nick alongside Emily.
Hello.
Emily, what is it we do around these parts?
Around these time parts. What?
Time parts?
Around here, we take a week-by-week look at the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the late 90s and early 2000s, and sometimes we deviate like we did last week. But this week, we're back at Nitro, baby!
Yeah, it feels like a longer gap for us. I don't know how we did this.
Yeah, I definitely was relying on that previously on package.
Well, today we're here to talk about the November 6th, 2000 WCW Monday Nitro. It's the day before Election Day, and I'm sure tomorrow will be totally calm.
Yeah, for sure. There won't be any, like, things hanging on out there and just any problems of that nature. I'm sure we'll know exactly who the president is tomorrow.
Yeah, see, I'm more worried about the ongoing weeks of how many fucking references we're going to get for that shit. So this show is in Chicago, Illinois, which I just took a quick note of something weird. The last four shows were in Arkansas, then Vegas, then Southern California. Now they're in Chicago, and then they're going to England next week.
Yeah.
They're jumping around just a lot. Usually it's a little more...
I mean, that was mostly on the West Coast. West Central. It's not like they're going from east to west to east to west to east to west.
Yeah, it just feels like a weird, bad travel schedule for talent.
We've talked about the travel schedule even like in current day WWE, where sometimes it just doesn't make any fucking sense.
Well, jumping around managed to work attendance-wise, because they have 7,000 in attendance.
Oh, damn. That's actually not bad.
The building seats over 20, so...
Yeah, I mean, but, like, 7 is not bad in comparison to past weeks.
I could not find how many were papered, but it was better attendance than ECW had, so...
But it wasn't as excited. It wasn't as passionate. That says a lot.
And this show did a 2.5 to Raw's 5.1.
Pretty standard. It actually feels low for Raw.
Yeah, they move channels, and they're pretty much floating around a 5, like, the rest of the way.
Okay.
I do have some backstage notes before we get into a hell of a weather report.
Oh, yeah, I figured that your weather report would be pretty long this week.
Talks between WWF and WCW about purchasing WCW have broken down because Turner wants to keep WCW on their channels, and Viacom owns, like, a small percentage of WWF in stock, so it's a weird conflict of interest thing there.
Okay.
WCW thought Vampiro was faking his concussion to stay home with his new baby. It's like, no, he does genuinely have one. And
but also let him be home with his new baby. Fuck you.
Yeah, he's done with WCW. He's not coming back.
Yeah, okay. That tracks.
Roddy Piper has filed a wrongful termination lawsuit against WCW.
Oh.
They pulled the, all right, you haven't been able to wrestle in 90 days, so we're going to stop paying you.
Okay.
And apparently, he cannot pass a physical. He's not been able to pass a physical the entire time he's been in WCW.
Oh.
Because he has an artificial hip.
That stops him from passing the physical?
Yeah, it didn't.
If you have a fake hip or a fake knee or a fake whatever, you can't pass the physical?
Apparently, but also didn't stop them before.
But I feel like that can't still be true now.
I don't know. But at the time, yeah, they would not pass him because of the hip, even though he had wrestled for years on this hip.
That's crazy.
There are rumors of Vince Russo returning next week.
He does not.
No.
There's no way.
Well, you know, there's an international trip, so there's got to be some Russo news, right?
Sure.
Tori Wilson might get released because she's making $250,000 a year.
That's worth her getting released?
They're trying to cut costs. And
oh, well, she's not doing anything. If she's just sitting home and getting $250,000 a year, hell yeah.
I mean, she's coming out with Shane Douglas, but
she
is that worth
it? She didn't come out on this episode.
Bobby Heenan got notice that his contract is not being renewed. He's been off TV for a while, yeah.
I thought we knew Bobby Heenan was gone.
Yeah, I think we said our goodbye to him, but this is him officially getting notice.
Yeah. It was unofficially official, and now it's officially official.
Hulk Hogan is still pushing his thing with Fox and claims that Randy Savage and Ultimate Warrior are going to be involved.
I doubt that.
And last week, despite a supposed hiring freeze, Lenita Erickson was signed to do something.
Who's Lenita Erickson? I know this name.
Yes. So I don't know what happened with this. So Lenita Erickson, it seems like it's like a former like Kiss groupie, Gene Simmons girlfriend. And she got hired by Brad Siegel. And it's incredibly unclear what the job was for. She swears like, no, like you know, we didn't have like an affair or anything. We're just really good friends. No one knew who she was until the Nitro book came out a couple years ago. And since then, I was trying to brush back up on this. almost all discussion about her from like Bischoff's podcast or anything else has been deleted from YouTube.
Weird.
The most you get is her response to Bischoff and her going like, fuck you, Eric Bischoff.
Weird.
But
there's some lawsuit here.
I don't know, but
If all of her stuff got scrubbed, like, there's some lawsuit.
I mean, it also might still be in the long form episodes. I don't know how they do their clips and bullshit, but yeah, it just, according to her, she almost runs the company. She almost buys the company and no. wants to run it with Jerry Jarrett and J.J. Dillon. And it's just like, she went from no one had ever heard of her to like one of the main characters in this story.
In her story.
And it always felt like she was working the author of Nitro. Like, I never really bought her story.
Do we have that book? We should get that book.
I've listened to the audiobook. And okay. Yeah, her thing just comes out of nowhere, and every single thing she does and is, like, told the story of, I was gonna do this, but I was way too ahead of my time. Yeah, and, like,
Okay. Her truth can be a truth.
Yeah, she wanted to do an all-female sports show, and apparently the network executive was like, this is amazing. We can't do this. But it's such a great idea. You're so talented. She is going to appear on a single Thunder doing an interview, but according to her, she showed up to the power plant, and everyone just assumed she got hired to run the company.
What?
And she went, sure.
What a crazy assumption.
Yeah. It's like, wait, how are you here? Like, we can't hire anybody. Oh, you must have got hired to run everything. And I'm like, what?
That's a crazy jump to make. Like, a new hire can, oh, you're here for the week to help us out with this one thing. That would make more sense.
Yeah.
You must just be a day player.
Yeah, but I listened to an interview with her, and, like, she's very careful about what she says about Brad Siegel, and it really gives the vibe of there was an affair.
Oh, well.
Like, that's the vibe it gives, obviously, allegedly. But when you get randomly hired to make $100,000 plus a year, and it's not for any specific role, it's like,
It's legalized hush money, it feels like.
Yeah. Oh, and apparently she wanted to have this weird robot character. I don't know.
You know, that doesn't even sound that crazy.
I'll have to find this for you, because the idea is shit.
It's WCW. That doesn't sound that outlandish. I can see that being thrown around in a writer's room.
Yeah, but she wanted to have a cool robot alter ego weird thing, and she's never going to wrestle. So it's like, why? Cool. What does it even matter? She's being paid $125,000 per year plus $500 for each appearance.
Okay. I mean, that's a hell of a contract. What are you going to do on the day-to-day? We'll figure that out later.
Yeah. You're running this, right?
Yeah.
I will note that apparently she got interviewed for the Death is WCW documentary thing they did. And, oh, wouldn't you believe it? They cut all my stuff. So, clearly somebody else is a little skeptical, too.
And that's all for the backstage notes, but maybe look into this on your own time as well.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to. I'm curious about all this. You can look into, like, court records to see if there was some form of a lawsuit in some state.
Yeah, she has a YouTube channel that and like does music on there, and for the big success she talks about, very few subscribers.
Yeah.
But let's move into our lengthy weather report where there's going to be prolonged thunder.
So much thunder.
You know what there's not, though, on this weather report?
What?
Stevie Ray, baby.
Hell yeah. Get out of here.
You know who's on commentary on Nitro next week?
Who?
Stevie Ray, baby.
Fuck. Well, I figured that this was going to be a long Thunder report because it rarely happens. A weather report,
please.
Whatever. It rarely happens when in the actual episode they refer back to Thunder and it's something that actually impacted the Nitro. That happened like 4 times in the episode. So I was like, holy shit, Nick's got a lot to fill me in on. Yeah.
This is another instance of a bunch of backstage stuff is cut from Peacock.
Mm.
I don't know why. Like, there's a whole Sean Stasiak, like, interview that's cut.
On Thunder?
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
And it's just kind of been the case of the pre-tape stuff doesn't make it to Peacock. And I can't find any rhyme or reason. Mm. A car with a New Jersey license plate is here. And frankly, I thought this was going to be somebody different.
It's Vinny Russo, bro.
No, it's Bam Bam Bigelow, because Russo's from New York.
Oh, fuck. Please. Duh.
Yeah, Bam Bam is back and just randomly attacks Crowbar.
Okay, so this was a return for Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yes.
Okay, because I didn't think that I'd see him in a while, but I didn't want to come on here and be like, we haven't seen him in so long. And you'd be like, no, you dumb idiot. It's been 2 days. Like, not that you would ever say that, but
he, like, challenges Goldberg, but then faces crowbar in a match and beats him. And
these crowbars still getting time.
And I might have an explanation for the weird Goldberg segment last week. I forgot to note this earlier.
What weird Goldberg segment?
So last week on Nitro, Goldberg came out and just kind of beat up the Boogie Knights, but didn't do like any like of his big moves or pin them or anything.
Yeah, he just kind of like squashed them and was like, all right, this is my time now.
It may have been a protest because of the glitter.
Really?
Yes.
He took out his anger on the Boogie Knights because of glitter?
No, I'm saying I think that was supposed to be a match. Goldberg went, I'm not working in all that fucking glitter. Because I think they changed the mat during this show.
Did they? I don't think so.
We don't see anybody else covered in glitter later. So I think they changed the apron.
It's possible.
Evan Courageous is suddenly getting a big ego, and the other two members of Three Count aren't having it because he's claiming, like, I'm the leader now. And then,
I'm like the lead singer of the band, dude. And everybody's got a freaking problem with me, dude. Well, and they're all just like jealous and shit.
I know your reference. I don't know if anybody else
these
is gonna...
chicks don't even know the name of my band.
But Shane Helms and Shannon Moore just fully turn on him after the match. And then 6 seconds later, Kaz and Yang turn on Jamie-san.
Okay, that was one that I was curious about, because they talked about in the episode, they showed, well, they talked about, I guess, Three Count turning on Evan, but then Jamie-san didn't come out with the Young Dragons, so I was like, where's Jamie-san? Okay.
Yeah, they just, both these turns happen within 10 seconds of each other.
Cool.
And Leia Meow unmasks Jamie-san.
Yes, that too. What?
So yeah, so Three Count and the Young Dragons have both shed a member. I'd say at least it gives these teams someone new to work with, but does that really count?
No.
Kevin Nash books Chuck Palumbo versus Sean Stasiak and then slaps Mean Gene's ass. When the match comes, Palumbo is out cold backstage. Stasiak claims innocence. And of course we want Hall chance.
Sure. There's a lot of those in the Nitro too.
During a match, the referee actually stops Major Guns from blatantly interfering because she gets in the ring and he's like, what are you doing?
Okay.
It's like the rules.
The rules are only enforced against a woman.
During Thunder, Meng is back. And by back, I'm like, he's kind of been back because we saw him face Goldberg a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. I do like who he's teaming with in Nitro, though.
Do you?
I do.
He's subbing in for Lance Storm, who's also in the next match after that. And Storm berates Meng for losing, so Meng does the Tongan death grip. And now Storm can't cut a promo before his match because Meng injured his throat.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Yeah, the interview with Sean Stasiak was cut for some reason, but during that he notes, yeah, I didn't actually train in the power plant like all the other thrillers. And I went, oh yeah, I never really thought about that.
I've never thought to think that. Like, that's never been something that's really come up as like a point of, oh, we're a team because we were all together in the power plant. That's not something that I ever thought was a storyline.
He also notes that there's going to be a surprise on Thunder. The closest anyone's able to come up with for that is Palumbo got attacked, so maybe it's that.
Whatever.
Norman Smiley is back to face Lance Storm. And this is the match I mentioned that Lance Storm went on his website and apologized. And
oh, because it was so bad.
It was fine.
Yeah.
It was totally fine. I don't get the need.
Weird.
Like, there's a sloppy moment here or there, but it's not
Lance
like the
Storm
whole match.
Lance Storm is also such a perfectionist that maybe that like one or two sloppy moments was enough for him to get into his own head. Like, maybe it was just a mental thing.
We hear from a Booker T interview that was cut that he wants Steiner at Mayhem and Steiner can pick the stipulation.
So how'd you hear it if it was cut?
Because Tony Schiavone recaps it from where it would have been.
Oh.
He goes like, oh, as you just heard. I'm like,
okay.
No, I didn't.
Helpful. Thanks, Tony.
And we get Vampiro's last match in WCW because he's concussed and the finish is him taking a powerbomb. So.
Great.
That's fun for him.
Great.
And that's Thunder.
Okay, that was a lot. There was a lot to talk about there.
Yeah, a lot of people coming back for the last few months.
Yeah, a lot of returns. So I guess we're saying that Meng is a return. Bam Bam coming back doesn't really make any sense to me. Bam Bam's also one of those that, like, you could have told me that we saw him 3 weeks ago and I would have just smiled and waved. Because he's never enough of a solid, like, stable player that he's in every week story to story.
Yeah.
That, like, he could come in once, disappear for 3 weeks, and come back. So I wouldn't have been surprised if that's what happened. I don't really know where he's going with his story as of tonight. It doesn't really feel like a long living story.
No, but we'll get there.
Sure.
Let's go to our main show. We open with a recap from just last week's programming.
Helpful. I needed that.
Earlier today, Madeja distracted Sting for Scott Steiner to attack, and it was pretty much immediately broken up.
Wah-bam. It was like, oh, Sting. Wah-bam. Like, no time.
Yeah, I don't even know why she had to distract him at all.
No. Still seeing Sting without his face paint is weird to me.
Well, I think after next week, he's going to be gone for a while.
Sting?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he's Sting and that's just what he does.
Okay.
Backstage, the Natural Born Thrillers just mumble something about a tag match.
Okay, good. I had to watch this twice, and I'm like, if Nick understood any of these words, I'm calling bullshit.
Well, the only thing I understood was someone's going to be SOL.
And you know what that means.
Yeah, they're turning it into a meme.
Oh my God. It was the laugh after it was, again, a niche reference. The character from the Amanda Show, the Penelope Tate that goes, meh, it was that form of a laugh. Like, hearing Kevin Nash laugh like that makes me viscerally angry.
We then get the opening pyro. It's Tony Schiavone, Scott Hudson, and Mark Madden on commentary. And Lex Luger comes out to the ring, and Jesus, his dye job.
It's bad, right?
Yeah.
It makes him look so old.
Yeah.
It's really hard to look at.
I don't know what color he's trying to really go for.
I think he's going for platinum blonde, but he's not like toning it properly. So it just kind of looks almost skin color. It's bad.
He has a magazine in hand and goes over to commentary and tells Mark Madden to stand up. He yells at Madden for supposedly saying something about his conditioning last week and calls Mark Madden fat. This was a shoot. This was not planned.
Oh.
In his career, Lex Luger goes on and on about being 4% body fat.
Yes.
Last week, I don't know if he slipped up or whatever, he said 5% body fat.
Oh.
Mark Madden noted that and said something about something or other. Like, we didn't even note the line, so clearly it wasn't a big deal.
No.
Lex Luger took personal offense to that.
So Mark Madden must have been like, oh, he must be slipping. Now he's 5%, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And
okay.
So this is why Mark Madden looks genuinely confused and like, what the fuck?
Okay.
Because commentary is like, that was unprofessional. It's like, yes. Yeah, it was.
Sure was. Weird.
Mark Madden does note, so much for the heels working together.
Yeah, right? But Lex calls Mark Madden an endomorph, which does come up later in the show, too, for some reason. But an endomorph is just like a blob of a man, essentially. He's like, don't talk to me about body physique when you're just an endomorph.
Luger then gets in the ring for his actual promo here. He says he'll beat Goldberg and Mayhem and then name drops a bunch of wrestlers, including Scott Hall. So,
yeah, he names like Scott Hall, the Road Warriors, some other guys were just like at home. I guess they're still in contract?
It's just guys who made WCW.
Oh, okay.
Luger notes Goldberg is writing a book and WCW Magazine apparently has a whole chapter from the book. He then brings in Ross Foreman.
Poor Ross, this poor guy.
We've never seen this man before, but he runs the magazine. And Lex takes personal offense to not being mentioned or having an interview in the magazine. And commentator's like, you've been gone.
You have nothing to say.
Remember a few weeks ago when Lex Luger was kind of feuding with Huge Erection?
No.
And how that went nowhere?
No.
Well, Stevie Ray had his suckers gots to know.
Suckers gots to know.
Well, sometimes suckers don't know.
Suckers do not know.
So yeah, he's running down Ross Foreman, and I got a little distracted by the big-ass Ready to Rumble ad on the back of the magazine.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Lex puts Ross Foreman in the torture rack, and the referees come out to scold him, and commentary has some line of, like, that's devastating to an actual wrestler. Who knows how bad that is for Ross Foreman? It's like, all right.
Okay, Jesus, they're just burying Ross. This poor guy did not ask for any of this. All I took out of this is Goldberg has a book. I don't know that I need to read that book.
No.
That will not be coming to the Patreon.
Luger says Goldberg is next. And then backstage, we see Goldberg has just arrived.
Like, cool.
Oh, okay. I'm really not excited for that match at Mayhem.
It's going to be 10 seconds.
I worry it's not, is the problem.
It's going to be hot dogging and showboating and then 10 seconds of actual wrestling.
Okay, I can't roll that out. We go backstage. Pamela is with Kevin Nash and the Natural Born Thrillers. Kevin Nash has Goldberg's book, and he's looking at the image. He's like, oh, why is he in, like, you know, why is his hog out kind of vibe? And Nash says they're a stronger group without Stasiak, and he wants a title shot tonight against Booker. But during this, he, like, drops the book by accident and just interrupts self and goes, pick that up.
Yeah, does he drop the book?
Something
I thought something off camera, like behind him.
I don't know, but just the train of thought, I just picked that up.
He stops the whole promo. I swear it's some PA off camera dropped something. He's like, hey, you dropped something. It's the same vibe of somebody dropping a glass next to you and shattering it. Like, you dropped something.
It definitely was the book. Stasiak comes in and apologizes. He's like, I don't want to face Reno later, but Nash, I'll, like, have your back for your match with Booker. Let's move on. Team Canada comes out to the ring and Lance Storm talks about the election.
I honestly forgot that this was an election year. Obviously, 2000's an election year. And it's fucking November. Obviously, it's election season. Oh my God.
Lance Storm with the line, if you want to improve your life, don't vote, emigrate.
It's still true today. It really is.
And instead of the Canadian anthem playing, we get Kiwi's music hitting, and Jesus Christ, the glitter. It's worse than last week.
The hair gel being glitter gel is what got me. It's awful.
Well, Duncan throws Kiwi in the ring, and commentary's immediately like, too much fucking glitter. What is this?
It is too much glitter. It's really bad.
Kiwi rolls up Storm as Paisley joins commentary. I'm like, okay. Kiwi clotheslines Storm to the floor, and Storm throws Kiwi into the barricade. Storm gets in Paisley's face, and she's like, I'll whoop your ass.
I will fight you for real. And I think she would.
Kiwi hits a diving crossbody as Paisley coins the phrase, Angry Allen. She also notes they have backup, and I'm like, yeah?
I mean, I didn't even hear her say that part, so the reveal at the end was more of a surprise for me.
Storm hits a jawbreaker and a super kick. The glitter is everywhere. It's all over Lance Storm.
Yeah, and he doesn't like shower or anything after either. It lingers.
Kiwi hits a springboard sunset flip and then a tilt-a-whirl front slam. Kiwi counters a Nordelite suplex with a DDT, but Storm catches Kiwi's vault over, hits a spinebuster into a Canadian maple leaf for the win. Storm won't break the hold as Duggan like boxes out the ref in the corner. And
Paisley is like, what's going on? Somebody stop him.
Well, a bit, because then she goes, I'm calling it in Operation Bad Hair Day.
Operation Bad Hair Day. That's what made me pop. I was like, who's Operation Bad Hair Day? It's Meng. It's Meng and his bro hair.
Also, Operation Bad Hair Day, definitely the title of this episode.
I think it's hilarious. I love it so much.
Why the fuck is Meng with Kiwi? That makes no fucking sense.
It doesn't make any sense, but Operation Bad Hair Day makes me giggle, so, like, it's worth it.
Yeah. It's road fucking Meng comes out? He makes the save, the heels bail, and, this is a good little match. Commentary did not help explain why Meng was out here. Meng has beef with Team Canada.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, from Thunder, and they just didn't bother explaining that at all.
So. Got it.
But, yeah. Meng and Kiwi, what a fucking groom.
I can't wait to see what happens. Like, there is a realm, I know this is not the realm we're about to dive into, but there is a realm of possibility where this kind of becomes a pairing the way that Rikishi and Too Cool was. Odd couple pairing. There is a path to success here. They're not going to take that path, but it exists.
Yeah, the problem is they've already tried that path. It was called Tank Abbott and Three Count.
Oh, fuck, they did do that.
Yeah.
Tank Abbott ruins everything. Fuck that guy.
We then go backstage. Mean Gene is with Goldberg, and they are really assuming everybody watched Thunder because they reference Bam Bam being back, and it's like, oh, okay.
Who the hell is watching Thunder? You. You're watching Thunder.
Goldberg says Bigelow wanting him is a death wish, but he's like, he's a hell of an athlete. I don't know why he's been at home for 5 months.
I mean, that's kind of a burial. It's kind of a, like, fuck you. Where you been?
I mean, I think for a while he was recovering, because last time we talked about Bam Bam, it was when he rushed into a burning house to, like, save some children.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, we didn't see it on TV.
No. So, like, well, obviously, yeah. That wasn't part of an angle. Wow. When was that?
I don't know.
Shit.
But Goldberg hints that his match with Bam Bam will be violent, and then points out, for all of Lex Luger's words, that, like, Goldberg's streak is still going, so... Yeah. Lex Luger then just comes in from out of nowhere. And by out of nowhere, I mean clearly just out of frame, so he's been standing there the whole time. And he distracts Goldberg for Bam Bam to attack for 3 seconds. Goldberg gets up and says both of them are next.
Cool.
Yeah.
These backstage segments tonight are just weird. In-ring wrestling is not bad tonight. The backstage stuff is weird.
And speaking of that, commentary chats, and you can see behind them, like, the audience doesn't look like it's really filled out.
No.
They've cut out some Battle Dome chat here.
Okay.
I don't know if there were, like, clips from the show.
So, yeah, I was going to kind of give you a little bit of shit for this, because you've been selling this episode as, like, oh, it's the big Battle Dome crossover. We got a Battle Dome crossover. Not really.
No.
We just got the guys. Like, you were selling Terry Crews to me hard, and he was barely seen.
I know they do show back up.
Okay. Not in this episode. Once. They're here once.
Yeah, they're also not on next week because they're not flying to London.
Great.
So
we got some time to stew with Battle Dome.
Our next match is Sean Stasiak versus Reno, except it's not, because Reno's music stops playing before he comes out.
Ugh, another production glitch.
Then it plays again, and we soon see Reno through a table with Chronic walking away. So I don't know if that was meant to be the explanation, but...
I would assume so. It's somebody paid off Chronic, because that's what they do.
Well, the Thrillers, like, run past Chronic, so they don't clock this, but they find him. Stasiak wins by forfeit. Reno is still the champion, and back from commercial, the Thrillers talk about who this might have been, and once they find out, they're going to be SOL.
You know what that means?
There was a great line here.
Great is a word. I don't know about great.
I'm no Columbo, but I am Chuck Palumbo. Fucking stupid.
Can't say that's great. It's fucking dumb is what it is.
I'm willing to bet a lot of money that Kevin Nash came up with that line.
Yeah. Or it's just stupid enough that Chuck Palumbo did think it up and threw it by Kevin Nash. And Kevin Nash was like, you know what? Yeah, say that.
We then get Ric Flair coming out to the ring and sucking up to all the Chicago fans. He says Mayhem is going to be the best pay-per-view they've put on in a while. I'm like, okay.
The bar is an inch off the ground.
Measured expectations. I appreciate that. Because he started saying the best pay-per-view, and I was like, if you say we've ever done, you're a fucking liar.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, no, that's realistic.
It's going to be on my birthday, too. We're 20 days away. It's on the 26th.
And did you catch the first match he announces, or hypes up, rather?
The Booker T. Scott Steiner match?
No, before that, he says you're going to get huge erection. He does not say G, he says E.
Yeah, he really just says huge erection here.
Versus Lance Storm, and he's clearly reading off a sheet here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, obviously.
He then says Booker T versus Steiner is going to be inside a cage at Mayhem.
Okay, so that enough is like, all right, we didn't need a cage, but sure, fine. Do your little gimmick, whatever, that's enough.
Flair says that Scott Steiner's conduct has been unacceptable, which prompts Steiner to come out.
Sure.
Steiner has a mic, gets in Flair's face, pushes him into the corner, so Booker makes the save, clears Steiner from the ring.
Okay, I'm following.
Flair goes back to his promo and adds a new stipulation to the pay-per-view match. He's going to hang a straitjacket from 12 feet over the ring. You can use it on your opponent, but you still have to win by pinfallers or submission.
So it's a cage match with a straitjacket on a pole. Holy fucking WCW.
Well, we get an explanation later that the cage is going to be caged heat. So it's like the Hell in a Cell has the roof. In my brain, I'm like, it was the open top cage.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, how the fuck would you get to the straitjacket? Because you're in the cage. You can't get, like,
maybe
go get a ladder.
Maybe it's going to be a taller cage?
Now there's a roof, you can go to the outside and get a ladder or whatever. My thought was, if it's just, like, right up to the ring, you can't get the straitjacket. I was really trying to figure out the physics of how is this going to work.
Well, I think it would have been easier to get if it was the open roof cage.
How would you get it?
Climb up the cage and jump.
Jump to the center of the ring?
Yeah.
You're going to fucking break your ankles.
Nah.
You're going to Randy Savage yourself.
Nah. I mean, I'm literally thinking of like a TLC match for where the belts are at the top.
Yes.
Like, maybe there's a cage there, but like they jump on the top of the rope, they go and they grab it and they swangle a little bit. And then they
Scott
fall.
Steiner's not taking that bump.
I don't know. That's the image that's going into my head. I'm thinking of like Tommaso Ciampa or like Johnny Gargano at SummerSlam.
Yeah. But again, with that, they can get to that spot because they have a ladder.
I guess.
Yeah. That was really the issue. I'm like, there's no way to get to that spot in the center of the ring safely.
Hey, they put a whatever on a pole for two big guys to try to climb to. Anything is possible.
Emily is referencing the Carson City street fight at Bash the Beach 96.
Oh, yeah, that was Bash the Beach. My bad. Spoilers. I was like, was that ECW? No, we watched too much wrestling.
Flair tells Steiner if he puts his hands on a non-wrestler, he'll be fired. Remember that.
Yeah, that's not going to stick.
So, yeah, another, like, weird Flair promo. Like, not a, like better than last week, but not...
Not good. Yeah. Not Flair. It ain't no mean woo by God Gene.
We then get a Jimmy Hart paid announcement.
Okay, I have a lot of questions about this.
He wants to fight radio DJs and cites a handful of DJs are way too big for this shit.
Yeah, like fucking Howard Stern, not coming out.
Jimmy mentions Mancow, and Mancow appears from 4 feet away.
Who obviously was listening.
Well, he wasn't listening because he says A cameraman told him that Jimmy Hart was talking shit. But, you know, the shit he talked from 10 seconds ago.
Not the shit from last week.
Yeah.
What?
Mancow gets in Jimmy's face and grabs him, but he's attacked by three count. Sure.
Mancow is attacked by three count. Yes. Well, two count, I guess.
No, they're still three count.
Oh, were there three of them in that?
Nope, they're just still calling
three calling count. I'm calling them two count because it's too confusing.
Yeah, so we're setting up for another Jimmy Hart Mancow match.
Okay, but the thing that I have a hard time with here, it starts with, this is a paid announcement by Jimmy Hart. After all that debauchery and fuckery at the end, that's obviously not how Jimmy Hart, like, in kayfabe, wanted that to go. It ends with, this has been a paid... Why the fuck did you pay for this announcement? You fucked it up. Yeah. Redo it, man. You fucked... that. Don't pay for that.
I did also have that thought for what it's
worth. Why? I would have let it slide if they didn't put the end card on it. If they weren't like, this, the previous has been a paid announcement. I would have let it slide.
I do kind of love the lore of Jimmy Hart so shit he has to pay for his own TV time.
I mean, yeah, that's true. But, like, you fucked up. Like, you don't want that to be your paid announcement. That's a terrible paid announcement.
I also don't know if this is meant to be earlier in the day or what. Because the next match has three count coming out, and they come out first.
Like, it must have been earlier in the day. Yeah.
I mean, in kayfabe.
Yeah. I think the paid announcement was earlier in the day.
Yeah, leading more to year. Do another take, my guy.
Take two. Why do people, like, influencers, people who make videos on TikTok, Instagram, whatever, why don't they do a take two? If take one doesn't go well, or, you know, you make a little mistake, you spill a drink or something, take two, brother. You flub a word, try again. It's the digital age. We're not on film anymore. We can afford to make mistakes. Do you know how many times we re-say sentences on this podcast because one of us fucks up a word? Often.
Do you know how many times we re-say sentences?
Fuck you.
Well, yeah, so next is three count, Shane Helms and Shannon Moore, versus the Young Dragons, Yang and Kaz Hayashi with Leia Miao.
That's enough.
Versus no. Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare.
We don't need them.
They're fine.
They're not. Don't lie to yourself.
I'm fine with them.
No, this would have been a great match if it was just three count and Young Dragons and Sean O'Hare and Jindrak fucked it up.
Three counts say their backs feel better since getting rid of Evan Courageous. And the Dragons come out. The two teams brawl and three counts sends them to the floor. The tag champs still aren't out here.
Yeah, because they don't need to be. Fuck them. Well,
the bell has rung. And I'm like, so in this world, hypothetically, Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare could have lost the titles because the ref decided to start the match early?
Yes, and they should have. You can't be on time, you don't deserve to be a champion.
They did come out on time. They came out at the exact moment they were supposed to, when their music played. The ref just started it before they came out.
Well, maybe the referee was on my team that was like, oh, three count versus Young Dragons, that's a good match. Fuck the other guys, start this one.
The champs come out, lay out three count. Jindrak hits his torture rack neck breaker to Moore, and they overpower Helms. The torture rack neckbreaker, I forget what the name of it is, because it was the one that, like, Conan could not figure out what the fuck MJ stood for.
Oh, yeah. MJ. Michael Jordan?
They are in Chicago.
Could be.
The Dragons hit a vaulting DDT and diving Hurricane Rana on the Thrillers. Three count and the Dragons argue over who gets to stomp the Thrillers until they just all do. Like, yeah.
Just do it.
They both hit double team moves on someone from the opposing team. Jindrak and O'Hare both counter a double suplex and hit one of their own the opposite way. The champs are sent to the floor and three count both hit a sunset flip. The Dragons vault to the Thrillers on the floor but are caught midair. Yang gets hip tossed to the floor back into the ring. Jindrak comes back in. Moore hits a springboard moonsault to O'Hare on the floor. Helms hits a final cut and the referee just stares at the pin attempt at first because someone has missed their cue. I don't know if it's Leia Miao or the interfering Evan Courageous.
Spoilers.
But the referee is just looking at Shane Helms.
Just staring.
Trying to pin someone. Evan Courageous interferes, breaks up the pin. That is literally all he does in this segment.
Yep.
Sean O'Hare then hits a springboard Shauntan bomb on Yang, giving the Thrillers the win. I was like, damn, man.
I don't know. I guess in theory that's I'm just sour on that team. I don't think that they're good. I like everybody else except for these two. Maybe I'm just sour. Maybe I'm just being a bitch. Eh.
I like them best of the Natural Born Thrillers.
Again, the bar is underground, brother.
Kez Hayashi then attacks Evan Courageous and throws him in the ring as the Thrillers just kind of get into it with the Battle Dome actors in the front row.
Yeah, they're just like antagonizing them for no reason. It's not like these guys were trying to get into the match or anything. They're just there.
The Dragons in three count all stomp Evan Courageous in the ring. We then get Jamie Noble coming in.
Jamie-san.
He kills the Dragons with a fucking chair shot.
That's my boy.
He and Courageous stare down, and then we cut away to backstage.
We hard cut. Middle of, like, celebration. Even I think commentary was talking. We hard cut to backstage where MI Smooth or whatever. He drives up in the limo and gets out of the car, goes to the back door, looks at the cameras like, oh, I bet you want to know who's in here. And fucking, like, Beautiful People's Us, almost, where he's like, oh, no, no, we did not kiss today. Like, why did we cut away?
And commentary's like, is this the guy who Ric Flair reinstated? I missed this storyline going on.
Sorry, we were reinstating someone? But, like, why did we hard cut to a fake out?
Yeah.
Why did we hard cut to this? I don't give a fuck about Smooth Jazz. Like, I don't give a fuck about who's in the back of that limo, because I didn't know that anybody was coming. I want to watch Jamie-san and Evan Courageous fuck around in the ring.
Oh, I think it'll only ever come up in maybe episode descriptions, but Jamie Noble here is spelled with a K. Like, Noble is spelled
like
with a K.
K-N-O-B-L-E. Yeah.
And it's just, I see it and it looks wrong.
Because I think that is wrong.
Well, when it comes to WWE, they drop the K.
Well, yeah.
Thoughts on the match, you know? Like,
I thought it was fun. Yeah. I liked the match. The wrestling is good.
Another good match from all these teams. Like, you probably could have done more to have Jindrak and O'Hara look like the big power guys.
Yeah, probably.
But
the Dragons are so bouncy.
Yeah.
Like, I still am so shocked every time they take a move and they just bounce. Like, they don't have bones.
They managed to split the time between these three teams, like, pretty evenly.
Yeah, they did. It was a good, well-put-together match.
Back from commercial after the limo segment, Diamond Dallas Page is back.
This pissed me off more than the hard cut. Why did we do the limo fake out if it was fucking DDP that was getting out? Why couldn't we see DDP coming out? Him just coming down the ramp, anticlimactic now.
Honestly, I thought he was going to be the guy on Thunder because somebody pulled up with Jersey license plates. And I was like, oh, yeah. It's going to be him. Nope.
That would have made sense too. But like, they fucked this up so badly. Like, you could have given like a shoe shot of somebody getting out of the limo and I would have been more okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, except, oh my God, someone's here.
Except we did that last week and we just fully showed Ric Flair.
Okay, well, again, I'm saying production can do better.
Can they?
It doesn't work if they fuck up, but if they do it right, then they can do something good. I would have been less pissed if somebody actually got out of the limo when we cut to backstage. But fucking Smooth going, no, 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 that pissed me off. So when DDP comes down the ramp, it doesn't feel like a big moment.
Yeah.
Is this a big return? Like, we didn't get really hyped up.
The other weird thing is he's not been on WCW, but he has been on TV recently because he's part of the Battle Dome stuff.
Oh, right.
So he's been on Battle Dome TV.
So he's still around.
I did laugh a little bit when DDP was coming out. Mark Madden referenced the old mysterious benefactor story. And I'm like, oh, wow, that weird timing for that.
Wait, what was that story?
We talked about that on the Bash the Beach episode. That DDP got fired and then he came back and there was a mysterious benefactor bankrolling him.
Oh, this vaguely rings a bell.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. I don't think it goes anywhere in 96.
But the fact that Mark Madden remembers it in 2000, that's crazy.
DDP opens with a Godfather 3 reference. Of the, just when I thought I was out, they pull me
back in.
He's like, well, I'm back, so I'm just going to have as much fun as possible. And he also references, like, yeah, I was on a non-televised house show, like, a month ago, wrestling Booker for the title, and just had a shit attitude. And he's like, you know what, no, I'm going to, like, be positive. The fans, like, kind of turned it around for me. I'm going to have fun. I'm like, all right.
He said, positively, Paige was a negative SOB until he heard the crowd pop. And he's like, all right, I'm in.
And you know what that means.
It means I'm quitting the podcast.
DDP says Flair called him and needed him back, and he came here to give his answer. I'm like, oh, this wasn't you
like
back
you
yet?
Coming back is the answer.
Yeah. But he's back, and he's jacked. And
he's back and better than ever.
His music hits, and then he's like, oh, wait, cut my music. Because he wants to trash talk the Battle Dome boys in the front row. And yes, that is Terry Crews.
Yes. You told me that Terry Crews was coming. We knew Terry Crews was part of this.
I don't know what anybody else is. I think one of the guys might be Madeja's husband, but...
Okay. Yeah, no, I even did a little bit of, like, a quick Wikipedia search on this, and none of the names rang any vague bells.
DDP then brings out Buff Bagwell, The Cat, and Rick Steiner. And they're all faces here, but they totally play heels on Battle Dome.
So all these guys are on Battle Dome?
They are doing a crossover angle, like, with both shows.
Oh, okay.
So, like, they go there and challenge the guy, you know, call him pussy, steal their belt.
Okay. Yeah, because this felt like a really random group of guys to bring out. So the fact that they're on the show, I guess that makes more sense.
Yeah,
that would have been cool to either show a scene or tell us that, like, they were on the show.
I think it got cut. I think because it was footage from a show they don't own.
Okay.
I referenced something in a cut earlier. I'm guessing that's where maybe that would happen.
Maybe.
It is still a weird group of guys, even if they, like, I don't know why they sent those four.
Yeah. Very, very random.
But the cat grabs the mic and tries to get them to jump the rail. Buff calls them gay with a homophobic slur, which gets too big a pop.
I think I missed that.
Yeah.
I think I toned that out.
Well, don't worry. He hits it again at the end of the segment, too.
Jesus, I didn't hear that at all.
Rick tells them to come get some. They hop the barricade. Security breaks it up. And Buff doubles down on the homophobia before ending the segment.
Cool.
So yeah, DDP's back and he's feuding with Terry Crews.
I'll take it. Yeah. I like Terry Crews. Is he going to have another moment in WCW?
Yes, they come back, but the big payoff for this is on Battle Dome, and the main villain of the piece is Rick Steiner, not DDP.
Okay, fine. Whatever. This is so low stakes. I don't care.
Yeah, and I'm not paying money for it.
God, no, I'm not paying money to find Battle Dome.
Because apparently it also aired in a really weird order. Like, Battle Dome didn't have their shit together for production, so it's like, oh, okay.
Great, that makes sense.
Let's go backstage. We get Pamela with Sean Stasiak. And he's like, I had nothing to do with Reno's attack, but he made a mistake last week, and I'm going to make things right with Kevin Nash.
Yeah, he wants to prove that he is a thriller at heart. This is just screaming swerve. Like, he's already no longer a thriller. He's already an ex-thriller, so he wants to come back and prove himself. This just screams, I'm going to destroy these guys, and I did fuck up Reno. Like, there's no... It's not subtle here at all. There is no subtlety here.
Well, in a weird theme, we have another match where the guy was basically just in the last segment, like, minus the interview. Because our next match is Jeff Jarrett and Scott Steiner versus Sting and Buff Bagwell. And I'm like, we just saw Buff.
Yeah. So like, but he didn't do anything, really.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, good. Two helpings of Buff.
It's not like he spent himself. He's your favorite. You love him. You should be thrilled.
So this was the tag match that the Thrillers were mumbling about earlier. At the start of the show. I don't know why, but... I swear, right before this match starts, Sting and Scott Steiner cannot figure out what corners they need to be in.
Oh, really?
They are walking the apron back and forth. I think they're trying to be like
where am I going? Yeah. Where do I go, gang?
It's like when you're walking towards somebody in the hallway and you both keep trying to, like, go around and pick the same
go
side.
Around each other, yeah.
Jarrett and Buff stall with the crowd to start. Buff hits an early swinging neck breaker. Sting comes in, hits a stinger splash to Jarrett, then throws hands with Steiner, including a 10-punch spot that stopped at 6 for a Sting dive into Jeff Jarrett. Steiner hits a belly-to-belly on Sting and is somehow the legal man now. Steiner hits his flexing elbow and then goes after the ref on a 2 count. Commentary points out he can't touch the ref, even though he's actively grabbing the ref.
Yeah, so consequences?
Steiner hits a backbreaker, then jaws with the crowd. Steiner and Jarrett work over Sting, including a bad rest hold to Sting.
Yeah.
Steiner's like, I'm not bending my knees for this.
Literally, it was like I've been saying that the wrestling on the show is not bad. This is like... We're phoning it in. Scott Steiner, at least, is phoning it in.
Sting almost fires up, but he's low-blowed by Steiner. Buff blatantly comes in to help with an aloha. Sting hits a DDT, makes the hot tag to Buff Bagwell. Buff hits a double-arm DDT and then wants the blockbuster and actually hits it on Scott Steiner.
Hmm.
While he's doing this, the referee gets distracted by a fucking shiny object or something because... He just pokes his head out of the ring and is pointing at something. I thought it was Sting.
It's not.
But we see Sting get in the ring and he's still like hanging out. He's distracting himself because Jeff Jarrett is going to come in and hit Buff with a guitar.
But it's not Medeja. It's not Sting. He's not on the side where commentary is. It's none of the above. It really is just he saw a penny on the ground. It was like, ooh, get that for me.
Jarrett and Sting brawl to the back. Steiner locks in the Steiner recliner on Buff, who is in a pile of guitar. And the referee is like sliding it out of the way to be like, oh,
damn,
is he
that's
quitting?
Crazy. Where'd that come from? Anyway.
So yeah, Steiner wins because Buff is unconscious.
Cool.
Like, I feel like you could have just pinned him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, this match was fine, but the finish, I'm just like, oh my God, guy. Like, we talk so often about the rules, and we'll talk about the rules in the main event too. But it's just like, just some consistency, man. That's all I want.
It's too much to ask.
But any thoughts on this match before we move on?
Not particularly. I didn't really care for this match. Yeah, I don't know. This was one that I was waiting for it to be over.
Yeah, Buff continues to be jobber to the stars.
I'm not even mad that Buff is back. Like, I don't hate watching Buff Bagwell. I know you hate him. I don't hate him. But it was, this match was just the most, like, generic thrown together match you could have thought of. And it was so boring. And I was literally looking at the clock like, are we done yet?
Oh, and it should be noted that Buff and Sting are teaming together because during that beatdown segment at the start of the show, Buff Bagwell tried to help. That's why Buff was in this match.
Oh, okay.
Next up, Lance Storm has joined commentary and he is still covered in glitter.
He is. I was kind of confused why he was on commentary for this match.
It's because he's feuding with General Erection.
Is he still?
Yeah, they have the pay-per-view match coming up.
The pay-per-view matches I cannot keep track of. I'm very much getting lost on what is actually coming up. What are we building toward? Because, like, even the main event, I was like, oh, so who is this match in between? Because I thought that the whole story was these two different guys. Like, I was getting very lost.
The Lance Storm match was the match where Ric Flair said huge erection.
Oh, was that Lance Storm?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because apparently on pay-per-view it was going to happen for the last time.
I don't believe that.
Lance Storm is here to commentate for General Erection versus Alex Wright for the U.S. title. And Lance Storm's like, why is Alex Wright getting a U.S. title shot?
Because it's going to be the Deutschland title.
Well, they're like, well, you know, he's won a bunch of matches. I'm like, has he?
He's not. He's fun to watch. This is also the first time that they mention that they're going to Germany next week.
Yes, there is the Millennium Final pay-per-view that I'm gonna glance at. I don't know if you want
to
watch it.
Can't really find it. Yeah, it's hard to, like, well, it's hard to find in English.
I don't think it exists in English. I think
it's crazy.
Yeah, so we're not doing the full review for that, but I might do a little quick report in like two episodes.
Okay, so Nick is gonna learn German in 2 weeks, and he's going to report back.
He's gonna watch the wrestling.
So Alex Wright comes out and does his whole promo in German, and Disco is like, I'll be your translator. And I know a very small amount of German. That was the language I took through high school and college. My dad is nearly fluent at this point, so I could pick out a couple of words. And the whole joke was that Disco was incorrectly translating from Alex Wright. But what I'm realizing was actually happening is Alex Wright was translating what Disco said the past sentence was.
I think Disco fucks this up.
Do you think
because
so?
Because it is, Alex Wright says something, Disco says something kind of according to that. Disco fucks up a line, and then it flips.
Because Alex Wright starts saying what Disco said prior in German.
Yes. Disco skips a line and starts saying them one early, it seems like.
Oh, okay.
Because at the end, I think Disco realizes and then just kind of goes, thank you. Like, clearly that was... like
he fucked up, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Because, like, the few little words I could understand, I was... like, I could see some lines of, like, what Alex was trying to say and then what Disco was saying. And, like, some things matched up. But obviously, the joke was that Disco was taking over the promo.
Yes.
Which obviously landed because we're explaining it so well right now.
Yeah. And these two are definitely heels here. Because for a couple weeks, they were like, maybe their faces? No.
No.
Match starts. The two lock up. Erection hits an early power slam and press slam to We Want Puppies chance. Because Major Guns is out here with him.
Of course.
Erection hits back-to-back elbow drops. And then a weird dancing leg drop. It's like, commentary's like, what was that?
Yeah, Alex Wright dancing is just, it makes me uncomfortable.
No, it was Erection dancing.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, and Mark Madden with the line, leg drops never win anymore.
Yeah, I think I was writing down that line, because the fuck, what kind of a dig was that?
Fuck you, Terry.
Yeah, really? I was like, holy fuck Hogan, all right?
Wright fakes Erection out with a back handspring and hits a spin kick. Wright locks in a nerve hold, then works Erection over in the corner with European uppercuts, or as he calls them, uppercuts. Wright hits an interesting vaulting moonsault. It's very gymnastics-esque.
Yes, I was looking for this move because you told me about it when you were watching it. Like, oh, he does this cool gymnastics move. It is cool. It's like a parallel bars swinging type move.
It didn't look impactful, but it looked cool.
No, it did not look impactful. It looked athletic, though.
Alex Wright then goes up top, and he hits a flying nothing. Oh, he actually hits it. I'm like, what the fuck? What were you
flying nothings aren't supposed to hit anything. Yeah. Hence the name.
He hits like a diving stomp to the chest, and I don't know. They just move on. I'm
was
like,
it
what?
Maybe it was supposed to be a flying nothing, and then Erection didn't move?
That's my thought.
Yeah.
But still, like, he landed on him. Incredible. You actually hit the flying nothing.
It's wild.
Disco's going to interfere, so Major Guns distracts the ref. Doesn't make sense, but sure.
Go off.
The other members of MIA then stop Disco and chase him off. Alex Wright hits a suplex, which seems to have no effect because Erection just gets up, throws Wright off the top rope, And Rexxion hits No Laughing Matter for the win. A technically fine match, but I had a hard time getting into this one.
Really? I like this match a lot. This is probably my favorite matchup to this point.
Yeah, well, it wasn't bad. I just, something was lacking for me. And I think it's the fact that I don't buy Alex Wright as a challenger for the US title.
No, I don't either. But like, he was a good wrestler and fun to watch. And like, this was a, until the finish, this was a no nonsense match.
Yeah.
This was just a straight up match. And Alex Wright's a good wrestler. Huge erection. Can be a good wrestler when he's not being a fucking character. So, like, I actually really enjoyed this because it was actually showing off that these two had skills that we don't get to see anymore because there's so much stupid around it.
Yeah, I don't care for huge erection.
I don't either, but this is my favorite match so far. Might be of the night.
Well, we got some Team Canada here. Let's go backstage for a little bit more. We get a Jim Duggan direct-to-camera promo that... It's pretty clever, honestly.
I like this, yeah.
It's basically a go out and vote PSA disguised as a heel promo.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, because he shouts about what's wrong with America, and like it just turns into like go vote to fix this.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you guys brag about being the best country in the world, but only 30% of you are actually going to get off your asses tomorrow and go vote. If you want to make some kind of good country here, you should probably go fucking do something about it. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, like, I feel like Jim Duggan could have just cut this as a face.
He could have, but I feel like it's more effective as a heel.
Yeah, he just needs to add the word tough guy in there a couple times, and this is a face promo. Tough guy,
how?
You know, it just occurred to me, we actually might not get a bunch of election stuff next week, because they're going to be in England.
Oh, true. I mean, they might say something about, like, how long does it take for us to figure out the results? It takes a while.
Yeah.
So they're probably going to say some sort of comment about, like, oh, we still don't know.
Because one of these weeks we get the, there's one vote you forgot to count. Backstage, Pamela Pumpkins is with Booker T. Booker says he's fine with facing Nashon tonight and then reiterates to Steiner he'll die before he gives up the title. And then...
He tries out a new catchphrase.
He tries out a couple new catchphrases.
He says booyah and something else. It's not, you know, the usual.
Yeah. Let's go to our next match. It's Bam Bam Bigelow versus Goldberg. We get the full Goldberg entrance. Scott Hudson claims that Goldberg is 14-0. I think that's consistent so far.
I'll be honest, I thought this was the main event when I was watching it. As like the match was finishing, I was like, all right, what's my best bit? What's my worst bit? And then it just like cut to a commercial on Peacock. I was like, that's weird. They never cut to commercial after the main event.
As a reminder, so Goldberg is 14-0. He has to get to 177. Like,
yes.
It's too many.
I'm sure he'll get there. It's not like the company's going to die or anything. He's got plenty of time.
In what is the go-to spot now, Bam Bam attacks Goldberg, getting in the ring, and then sets him to the floor.
That's the go-to elongate this match move.
Goldberg's leg is wrapped up. I'm like, oh, that's, I don't know but when he would have got hurt. But
I don't know. Obviously, there are some house shows going on, so maybe he did something.
Potentially, but his number didn't go up from last time, so.
I don't know. Also, maybe he lost.
I think they scrapped most of the house shows at this point.
Yeah, true. They don't have any money. I was only thinking that because DDP mentioned being on a house show.
From like over a month ago. I think, yeah, they started cutting stuff. Yeah, Goldberg's leg is wrapped up, so Bigelow goes after the eyes.
Sure.
Lex Luger distracts Goldberg from the ramp, so Bam Bam hits a back suplex and a diving headbutt. On the back suplex, you can hear Goldberg basically go, ah, shit. Bigelow wants a greetings from Asbury Park, but Goldberg slips out, hits a spear and jackhammer for the win.
Woo, quick match. We love a big boy quick match.
This is probably the most interesting Goldberg match of late, but that's not saying much.
You're probably right. I mean, no, yeah, you're probably right. Like, they haven't been interesting. They've been so quick. At least with this one, Bam Bam got a little bit of offense in before the spear and jackhammer. Like, yeah. There was something.
I feel like the only competition was when he was going to face David Flair, and I'm like, good.
Kill him.
Well, yeah, so, we're probably going to get more and more of this going on.
I really genuinely thought this was the end of the show. I couldn't remember anything else that was going on. Like, they didn't build this show well.
No, they really... Yeah,
they also kept reminding us that Thunder is on an hour later, and that just, like, kept coming up, and, like, don't forget, Thunder's on at 9. Like, what about the show that I'm watching right now, though? Tell me about the matches coming up.
Well, back from commercial, Scott Steiner's in the ring with a mic. He says he doesn't take orders from anybody and will kick Booker's ass at Mayhem. And I feel like he missed a trick with his ending line. Because he's talking about Booker's catchphrase of save the drama for your mama.
Yeah.
And he ends it with, like, you know, the only, like, drama is that she doesn't know who Booker's dad is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you call yourself the daddy all the time. Like, do something with that.
You trying to imply that Steiner is Booker's daddy?
No, I'm saying he should be like, she's going to find out who the daddy is. Like, he's going to go fuck Booker's mom.
Maybe. I feel like you would have had a problem with that, too, if he said that.
I probably would have pointed out, be like, he's going to go have sex with, like, a 60-year-old woman? I mean,
hey, yeah. Age is just a number. Age is just a number.
Yeah, let's... You want to have that be part of your brand?
On the upside, 30-year-old Scott Steiner can go fuck a 60-year-old woman. That's fine.
All right, yeah, you and Jerry Lawler agree.
Nope, that's not what I said.
Let's move on from that. Kevin
Don't
Nash.
Don't put words into my mouth, you fucking weirdo.
Versus Booker T for the WCW title. This is where commentary notes that the pay-per-view match is going to be caged heat. I'm like, okay, that makes sense how you're able to like hang this from something.
Assuming the cage is high enough, because there have been instances where that cage is low.
That'd be even funnier.
That would not be funny.
It's just like they have to actively work around the straitjacket.
It's just on a hanger in the middle of the ring.
Match starts, big we want Hall chance. Nash overpowers Booker to start and beats him down at ringside. This match is pretty quick, but I don't think they go to the corner once.
No, I don't think they do. It's shocking for a Kevin Nash match.
Yeah, we joked about doing time to corner before, and I'm like, we would have just been wrong in this one.
I was having a hard time understanding the story here. Like, I don't feel like with the episode that we just watched, what the point of Kevin Nash versus Booker T was.
Kevin Nash is in good with management and wants a title shot. That's literally what it was.
There was no build up to this match in this episode, though. Like, everything that Kevin Nash was talking about was, and you know what that means. Like, he didn't say anything about his upcoming match, really.
He did have one sleepy line about it.
Okay, well, never mind. I guess I'm wrong. Like, oh, yeah, this is definitely built up to. The story felt really weird going into it.
Well, at one point, commentary asked Scott Steiner, it's like, how would you feel about facing Kevin Nash? I don't want to talk about Kevin Nash right now. Why?
Also, you're on commentary for a match that Kevin Nash is in. Talk about him.
At ringside, Nash grabs a chair, but Booker fires up, takes the chair, and hits Nash. Scott Steiner on commentary, that's illegal.
Shut the fuck up.
Yes, you can't use a weapon. That tracks.
That does track, but shut the fuck up, Scott Steiner.
That's why the ref had to go look at a shiny coin during his match.
See, he's very aware of the rules.
Booker hits a diving clothesline, but runs into a big boot. Nash hits a side slam as Mark Madden notes he only has 3 moves.
Well.
So I'm ready for Kevin Nash to come cut a shoot promo next week.
Mark Madden's just making enemies.
Booker hits running forearms and a spin kick. He follows up with a scissor kick and a spin-a-rooney, which I think Scott Steiner is like, watch, he's going to do this.
Watch, here comes a spin-a-rooney. Oh, fuck.
Have you warmed to the spin-a-rooney?
I think so. In this sense, I have. Because to me, now it feels more like I'm not down. I'm getting right back up. I'm just getting started. I don't like it as a taunt. I like it as a means to get up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, he doesn't like draw it out and do the big like, oh.
Yeah.
Nash dodges a Harlem sidekick that sends Booker T into the ref. Booker wants a bookend, but Sean Stasiak runs in and hits Booker with brass knuckles, knocking him out cold.
Ooh.
Nash then gets him out and wants a jackknife, but Stasiak then hits Kevin Nash with the brass knuckles.
All swerve, bro.
He pulls Booker T on top of Nash and revives the ref to count to 3 for Booker. So, still your champion, Booker T, and he's not really been having a great run of looking strong.
No, he's not having a great champion run.
To add to that, Scott Steiner goes to leave, like, very casually, then pulls Booker T out of the ring, and we're out of time.
Yep. Like, this cuts the show so quickly. But, like, were you surprised by the swerve, bro?
Not really.
As soon as Stasiak came out, I'm like, oh, okay, this is where he's going to beat up Kevin. The fact that he threw a punch at Booker T first was like, oh, maybe I'm wrong. No, I'm not wrong.
The only real, like, question is it going to be, like a triple swerve and the Thrillers are with Stasiak still?
Oh, so everybody would be turning on Kevin Nash as a group?
Yeah, because there's probably more money in Nash versus the Thrillers than Sean Stasiak in any sense.
True. It's possible.
I don't know.
I'm no Columbo.
I'll tell you who, if that's the case, I'll tell you who's not coming back to help Kevin Nash, and that's Scott Hall.
That is true.
Thoughts on this show as a whole?
Not as bad as I expected it to be.
Yeah,
I'll give it that.
There's nothing really egregious on this show. No. I think your worst bit's going to be the Am I Smooth tease for no reason.
Correct.
But, like, I'm looking through here, and I'm like, yeah, nothing here made me, you know, go, Brother, we got to come back to this at some point.
No, not at all. And like the wrestling on it was actually pretty good as a wrestling show. Like the 7 minutes of wrestling that we got was pretty good. That said, I'm having a really hard time thinking of an MVP.
Yeah.
That's the hardest one today.
And it doesn't help that there was no filthy animals. So some of your go-tos were
exactly
not on the show.
It's really hard. It's hard when there's no like shining beacon of hope and light.
No Mike Awesome either.
No. No Mike Awesome, no Canyon, no Billy, no Ray. Not even a Conan to cut a crazy-ass promo.
Well, let's try to get our thoughts together here for best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emily, what did you come up with for your best bit?
I did say it earlier, and I guess you are going to disagree with me, but I gave it to the Boogie Nights General Erection match. The Alex Wright versus Huge Erection. I'm calling it Huge Erection now because fuck it. It was a fun match. I really liked watching Alex Wright. I found myself very involved with the match. Like, I didn't take a lot of notes because I was just watching, and to me that is a good sign when it comes to a match like that. There wasn't anything that really stood out as like the best thing that happened, so the match that held my attention longest, that's the best bit.
There's probably like five options for this, but none are big standout ones. I think I'm going to go with Lance Storm versus Kiwi.
Really?
And we'll continue that through Operation Bad Hair Day, because I did get a laugh out of just like, Meg?
Okay. Yeah, that's true. That was probably an honorable mention best bit for me,
and too. It was a good match, too.
It was fine. I just can't get over Kiwi.
The glitter.
It's so distracting.
All right. So, Emily, what is your worst bit of the show?
You called it. I'm giving it to the limo cut away from the triple tag team match. It was just egregious enough.
Yeah.
That just pissed me off.
Part of me wants to say the weird Luger shoot promo on Mark Madden.
Yeah.
But
that'd be valid.
Yeah. I think I'm actually going to go with Jimmy Hart's paid announcement.
Oh my God. That is actually a really good, that's a good call for worst bit. Yeah. You're right.
Because also the logic of the, I was interviewing Goldberg and the cameraman said Jimmy Hart was talking mess about you. Like the thing that's happening now, the segment you're currently in.
Yeah.
And yeah, Jimmy.
That logic of that entire segment made no sense. So yeah, that is a good
contender. And it's building towards something I actively don't want to see.
Right. Oh God, who'd you come up with for MVP though?
Well, Emily, I'm no Columbo, but I am gonna pick Lance Storm.
Okay, I was gonna say, are you about to pick fucking Chuck Palumbo?
No, Lance Storm had a good match. His commentary later, like, worked well for his character, and he's like, why the fuck is this guy getting a title shot?
I was actually also going to pick Lance Storm because he powered through the fucking glitter. Yeah. I also wanted to honorable mention DDP. DDP's back.
Yeah. His promo was nothing special.
No, but he's back, and that means that we're going to have a good match. So, like, looking forward to the future.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Butts and Seats podcast. Next up is Nitro across the pond.
In it.
Yeah. It's a proper Nitro, isn't it? And if you thought Emily's Australian accent was bad.
Crikey!
Yeah, we will try to keep the accents to a minimum.
You will.
I'm going to look at the demographics and I'm going to show Emily how people are...
Ah, shit. We do have a lot of people who listen in the UK. Yeah. All right, I won't try to... I'll try not to insult you. When I do an accent, I'm not trying to be insulting. I'm just trying to...
I'm just bad at it.
I'm just bad at voices.
So yes, next week is just Nitro. We'll go over Millennium Final the week after.
Gotcha.
Well, if you want to hear any of our terrible Australian accents from that trip, you can do it on our back catalog everywhere podcasts are found except for SoundCloud. You can also follow us on the social medias at Butts in the Pod or Butts in the Seats Podcast. And then out now over on the Patreon, patreon.com/buttsintheseats. $5 a month gets you a bunch of content, including our newest arc. It's the Rise of the NWO. Bash of the Beach 96, now out.
Woo!
We find out who the third man is, brother. Oh, no.
But whose side is he on?
Spoilers.
Oh, no.
We're going through the first year and change of the NWO, and man, this show just kind of feels haunted by the NWO at all times.
I had no idea we were doing an NWO podcast when we signed on for this.
And also over on the Patreon, we recently finished the Vince Russo book report for Rope Opera.
Ugh.
And for some reason, Emily... read Forgiven.
I sure did. So there are two formal book reports over there. It's Vince Russo's Rope Opera and Eric Bischoff's Controversy Creates Cash. I read these atrocities so you don't have to.
Yeah. Emily basically came to me after those and went, ain't gonna be no rematch.
Yeah, we're not doing another book report unless I read one of these books that's on my shelf that I've now started collecting books. if I read one and I'm like really inspired by it, then it's just going to be an impromptu book report. But I'm not planning anything at this point. I can't do it again. It really steals something out of my soul every time I do it. So
5 pounds of pressure, brother.
I'm staring it down, man. I'm staring down the barrel of the life outside the ring.
All right, Emily, any closing thoughts before we get on out of here?
Well, it's officially football season, and we're recording on a Sunday, so go Ravens!
And a go Birds to use.
And a very go Birds.
Well, maybe we'll get some proper football chat next week when Nitro's in England. The beautiful game.
And with that.
And with that, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to this episode of the Butt Seats Podcast.
Bye!